Okay, so let's get started. So I'm going to continue the discussion on demand page virtual memory from last time. Okay, but there's a brief recap of what we discussed. So we introduced this notion of virtual memory, which allows you or the OS to essentially pretend as if it had infinite memory resources on your machine. Okay, it's no longer constrained by the amount of physical RAM that's on the machine. And what the way this works is essentially all processes, the entire address space of all processes are kept on disk, okay, in a special partition called a swap space, and memory acts as a cache for disk. So you only bring in parts of the address space that are currently in use. Okay, this is referred to as the working set size. So only those pages are resident in memory, the other ones are on disk. Okay, this allows you to run multiple processes at the same time, allows any one process to even exceed the size of RAM. It allows the total size of all of the processes to be larger than the size of RAM. Okay, so by doing all of this, we get this nice benefit of this memory management scheme. Okay, and we looked at how this works, and then towards the end of the class, we were looking at page replacement algorithm. Okay, so whenever you fetch a page, so if you have a page fault where the process accesses a page that's not in RAM, then the OS has to fetch this page from disk and put it into RAM. Okay, now if all the pages in RAM are currently allocated to some processes, then one page must be evicted. Okay, and the way this is done is using page replacement. Okay, so we have seen FIFO, okay, and then I introduced these two other algorithms called min or optimal and LRU. Okay, so we'll look at some exercises that show how these things work. So that's the unfinished business from last time. So we did FIFO already. Okay, so we said this is the request stream. Let's assume memory has 3 frames. We said for this access pattern, okay, for these 4 pages, what is the contents of memory? How much page falls here? Okay, so in this case we had 7. So now we are going to do min. Okay, min essentially says look into the future and throw the page out that is going to be accessed farthest into the future. Okay, that is not going to be accessed for the longest time, in other words. So this is same access pattern as the last time. So you will do this here. Okay, so let's say F1, F2, F3. Okay, the first 3 page accesses A, B, and C are all going to be page fault. You start with empty memory. Page A gets accessed, that's a page fault. You bring it in, stick it into frame A. Next page B gets accessed, so you bring it in, also a page fault. You access C, also page fault. Okay, so that no algorithm can change. The next you access A, which is this access. Okay, these 3 are done. So come here, you access A. A is already in memory. Okay, so there's nothing, the contents of memory doesn't change. Then you access B, same thing. Okay, it's already in memory here, so no page fault, contents of memory doesn't change. The next one is D. Okay, that's clearly a page fault. And D is not in memory. So now question is, which page should you replace? Okay, so what you have to do, so someone said C, that's right. So what you have to do is, you are here, okay? You look into the future and say, what are my contents of memory A, B, and C? Of the 3 pages A, B, and C, which is the page that's not going to be accessed for the longest time? So if you look at here, A gets accessed 1 time step into the future, B gets accessed 3 time steps, and C gets accessed 4 time steps. So C is the page that will be accessed farthest into the future, so that's the one you are going to replace here. Okay, so you have A, B, and D. So now we are here. Okay, so we replace C, that's a page fault. You will go access A, no page fault. Go access D, no page fault. Go access B, again there's no page fault because all 3 of them are here. Then you come to C. Okay, that's going to be a page fault. So now you have a choice. You look into the future. You only one time step into the future and the tray stops. So certainly you cannot replace B. Okay, B is going to get accessed, so you can pick between one of these 2. Okay, doesn't matter which one. So you basically, let's say you replace A. and you're done. Okay, and then the next access is B. It's not a page fault because B is already resident in RAM. Okay, is this clear? How to work through this? So how many page faults did we get here? Okay, each of these starred accesses is a page fault, so you have 5. Okay, in case of 5-4, you had 7. Now you are down to 5. Okay, this is optimal. You cannot do any better than this. Okay. As you can see, the problem with this approach is it requires knowledge of the future, which you will never have really. Okay, so you can never implement this technique in practice. But given a certain access pattern, you can compute what could have would have been the optimal and what did a particular algorithm do. Okay, so it's used more for comparison purposes than for any practical implementation. So next one is LRU. Okay, so let's do LRU, same access pattern. First three access, nothing changes. Okay, the memory is empty, so there's not much you can do here. Okay, so those three will be page faults. Okay, so you are here, you access A. A is already in memory, nothing to changes. You do B, same thing. Okay, B is also in RAM, nothing changes. And you come to D. Okay, and say now I'm going to replace D. Or rather bring in D, that's a page fault. So now instead of looking into the future, you have to look in the past. Okay, and say which is the least recently accessed page, which is the page that hasn't been accessed for the longest time. Instead of looking in the future and finding this, you look in the past. So between A, B and C, you see that A, B was accessed one time step into the ago. A was accessed two time steps back and C was accessed three time steps back. So you will replace C. Yeah, because now you are looking back, so C is gone, D comes in, so your access memory contents looks like this. Okay, so then you access A, nothing changes, you access D, nothing changes, you access B, nothing changes, and then you do C. Okay, that's a page fault because C is not in RAM. Okay, so that's going to be a page fault. So you again look in the past. Okay, so you say, okay, of the ones that you have A, B and D, which one was accessed farthest in the past? Okay, so you look back, B was here, D is here, A. Okay, so A is the oldest or least recently accessed page, not the oldest page. So least recently accessed page, so this one goes out. So this is what you do. And then the last one, B, is already in RAM. Okay, so how many page faults do we have? Okay, you have 5. So in this case, LRU matched min. Okay, this is because the past just turned out in this case to be a good predictor of the future. Okay, because this is the crucial point where in min you looked in the future and you saw C was the oldest page. Here you looked in the past, turned out C was also the oldest page. Need not have been. Okay, it just so happened that this was a good predictor, so you evicted C and you basically got the same performance. Okay. Now it's only going to approximate in practice, not give you exact results. Okay, so because this observation is broadly true that near past is always a predictor of the near future, okay, then you will get an approximation of what min would have done. Okay, it won't be exact. In this case, we just lucked out.
So the worst case for this would be...
Yes, so we are going to come to the worst case. Okay, so... Okay, so when will LRU perform badly? Any thoughts? So you are going to say something about the worst case. Why don't you tell us what the worst case? Sorry?
We fault every single time.
Yeah. So you can fault every single time. So here is an access pattern. Okay. So you have 4 pages, A, B, C, D. You just access A, B, C, D, A, B, C, D, and so on. And you have 3 frames. Okay, so what will happen here? You'll get A, then you fetch B, you fetch C. Okay, and then you bring in D. Okay, so D says, then you look back and say A is the oldest page, you just throw out A. So you basically have D, B, C. Okay, and then you just throw out a page that is going to get access next. If you had actually had knowledge of the future, you wouldn't have thrown already. But if you, since you looked at the past, it looked like B was the least recently accessed. So everyone will be a page fault because you will always replace a page that gets access the next. Yes. Okay. So question is, will throwing out the most recently used, so in this case it turns out doing MRU is optimal. Okay. But that's not always the case. If you think about it, if you are throwing the most recently used page, because you have locality of reference, it's typically likely that that page will get access, so you shouldn't have thrown it. In this case, the problem is not that you should throw out the most recently used page, it is just that your working set requires four pages. All four pages are in active use, they are accessed with equal frequency. By giving three page frames, you actually haven't given this process sufficient pages, which is why it's faulting a lot. If you just increase this to four frames, you give it one more page frame, this process, then all of the page faults go away, because all A, B, C, D, all of them get put in RAM, and then from this point on there is no page fault whatsoever. Okay? So the problem here is that the working set is greater than the amount of RAM you are given this process. Okay, and that's why it's faulting, not that the algorithm is doing something bad. Yes, question.
Well, maybe makes sense to throw out the second most recently used page that isn't adjacent to the current page.
LRU essentially does that, but it's saying I'm not doing the second, I'm going to, I could make the same argument, the second one will probably get access in the future. So the LRU is saying it's the nth most recently accessed page, which is essentially the least recently accessed page among all the ones that are resident. In this case, it's a hopeless case for LRU. It is always replacing the page that is going to get access next, because you're cycling through the pages, and you can only keep the three most recently accessed pages, and you always access the one you just threw out. Okay, this is the worst possible case. Okay. So the right thing to do here is actually give the process more pages, not change the page replacement. The LRU is doing what it is supposed to do. You haven't given it enough memory. Okay, that's the problem. Is this clear? Okay, so now we will switch back to this lecture and continue our discussion. Okay, so today we will look at variants of LRU. You will see why we need variants at all. We'll talk about some hardware support, and then we'll talk about multi-programming and how this impacts page replacement. Okay, so now we will actually continue these examples. Okay, so we are back to FIFO. Okay, this is the same example as before, except that we'll do FIFO with three frames, and then this is actually a separate example which says same reference stream, what happens with FIFO with four frames. Remember that we already did this last time, we got seven page faults. Okay, we are now going to do the same example, but say we'll give it one more page, we'll give it four frames, what happens? Okay, so let's do the example. Okay, so what do we have? A, B, C, D are the first four accesses. They are all page faults. You start with empty RAM, right? So A goes here, B goes here, C goes here, D goes there. Okay, so you will basically put A, and then that's the contents of RAM after four. After the first four accesses. Okay, this is FIFO. So now we are back to A. A is resident, no page fault. Then you access B. B is also in RAM, no page fault. Then you access E. Okay, that's a page fault. E is not resident in RAM. So what happens here? Okay, you will do FIFO, which means you will throw the page that came in first. That's A. Okay, because A is the first page that was brought into memory. Okay, so you have E, B, C, D. Okay. So that's E. Then you access A, that's another page fault, you just evicted A, so we'll throw out the oldest page. Which one is that? Okay, it's B. So you basically do E, A, C, D. Okay, that's a page fault. Then you access C, another page fault, you just evict, rather not C. C is not a page fault. C is still in RAM. No, it's B, sorry. So it's, I think, so we are here, right? So B, so you will evict B, I mean, bring in B and evict C. So you have A, B, E, A. When you access C, yes. Oh, I'm sorry. These are two separate examples. Okay, so this one says do this reference tree with 3 pages of memory. This one says do it with 4 pages of memory. We'll come back to this and we'll do this again. Okay, just to compare the two. Okay, so now you have E, A, V, C. Okay. And then you access D, so you basically have E, and this one goes away. That's a page fault, and then you do E, which is D. Okay, so lots of page faults here with 4 frames. Okay, let's repeat the example with 3 frames. So we'll just do it above here. Okay, so this assumes there are 4. We'll do F1, F2, F3. So what if you had given this process only 3 pages, 3 frames, not 4 like here? Okay, so that's the first example. So A, B, C is unchanged. Okay, so you have. Page fault, you access D. Okay, so you will throw out the oldest frame. So you have DBC. And then what happens? So we are here. Okay, so access A. You just evicted A, so that's a page fault. You have DAC, and then B. What goes out?
C.
Okay, then E is next. Okay, so now you access A. So we are here. Access A, it's in memory. You access B, that's also in memory. Okay, you go to C. Okay, that's a page fault. So which one would you throw out?
A.
You're accessing C. And the next two are also going to be page faults. Right, so...
No, only two.
Sorry, we are here, right? So the D is going to be a page fault.
But B is in memory.
Okay, so which one is the oldest page here? So you will actually evict C, because C is just being brought in, B is going to get evicted. Okay, so you have E, and then the last one is not a page fault. So how many did we get here? So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Here 1, 2, 3, 10. Okay. So what is this telling you? You gave the process more memory and it performed worse. Counterintuitive. Right? You give it more memory, you expect it to perform better, but it's actually doing worse. Okay, so what this shows you is for some page replacement algorithm. Okay. Giving a process more memory may not actually give better performance. It may actually give a yield worse performance. This phenomenon is referred to as Belletti's anomaly. It's named after the person who actually discovered this problem. Okay. So it's anomalous behavior. Okay. It's only true for some cases. You can do LRU. Okay. I'm not going to do it. Just repeat this with LRU, you will see that you will not see this behavior. Okay. In LRU, what will happen is as you add page frames, the number of page faults will actually decrease, not increase. Okay, which is what we expect. You give some process more frames, you expect it to perform better, at least as well or better, not worse. Okay, if you give more memory, you should have fewer page faults. So for LRU, that's the case. For FIFO, that's not the case. Okay? So FIFO is among a class of algorithms that exhibits this problem, okay, called Bell-Eddy's anomaly. Okay, LRU does not. Okay? The question is why? Okay, what changed? Or what is the property we want to prevent this problem?
Number of processes should be exactly the same as the number of frames that
you're... Number of processes should be exactly the same. Here we have only one process. Okay, so we don't have any concept of a process.
Like,
so we'll come to processes and how much memory to allocate. Okay, that's coming. But,
is it because the other algorithms pay attention to when the frame was used and FIFO doesn't?
Right. So FIFO doesn't pay attention to when the page was used. Okay, that's absolutely right. And because of this, and LRU does, and so does MIN for that matter. And because of this, what happens is if we actually look at how LRU behaves, you look at RAM contents. Okay? If you see in LRU case, what will happen is as you add more frames, the contents of RAM is always a superset of the previous content. Meaning you have all of the same pages and you have some more. Okay? Because you are just keeping the most recently accessed and most recently accessed pages. You add n plus one frame, you just keep one more old page and all the previous pages are still in RAM. Okay? So if you have a property where by adding more memory, you keep the old contents of memory and you keep get some more pages, meaning the contents of memory is always a superset. Okay? And then you will never have fewer page faults. I mean, you will have more page faults because you will do at least as well. Okay? Because you have the same pages, you can't do any worse than this one, but you have some more. So if you get accesses to those pages, you will have fewer page faults. Okay? In FIFO, you will see that the RAM contents are never not necessarily a superset. Okay? In this case, it is so. In this case, you're A, B, C, D, and you are a B, C, D. So you have B, C, and D in this case, and you have one more page. So this particular time instant, you have a superset. But that is not always the case. Okay, as you will see, in this case, you may have, there will be scenarios. Okay, so let's look at this. Okay, this time step. Okay, so you have E, A, B, you have E, A, C, D. Okay, there is no B here. So this is not a superset of that, okay, because this one does not have B. Okay. Because of this property, this FIFO can actually do worse. Okay. So if you think about it, if you always have the same pages as the previous, when you had less RAM, but have some more, you cannot do any worse, because if there's a page fault there, you may have some more pages that may allow you to avoid that page fault. In this case, that's not the case. Okay. So any algorithm that does not have this property, whereby adding more memory, you get some totally different set of pages, not necessarily a superset, then your behavior is unpredictable. You may actually get worse behavior, okay, or you may have Bell-Eddy's anomaly. Okay? That's the intuition as to why in LRU, increasing the number of frames always decreases the number of page faults. But in FIFO, that is not the case. Okay? FIFO, you may actually get worse behavior. Okay. Now you can prove that in LRU this property is true and so on. I just gave you the intuition, but that's the reason why LRU behaves as we expect it to behave, but FIFO does not. Okay? Any questions here? Before we talk about implementation. Okay, so as should be clear by now, this kind of exercises, expect them on the homework, possibly on the exam. Okay, so we have done like 7 of these now. So, alright, so let's talk about implementing LRU. So how would we implement LRU? So FIFO, we don't want to implement, it has Bell-Eddy's anomaly. MIN, we cannot implement, we need knowledge of the future. LRU seems to be the most reasonable thing that you can pick, okay, for implementation. So what would we do? Okay. So clearly you need to keep keep track of when a page was accessed. If you want to evict the least recently accessed page, you need to know what was the most recent time of access. Okay? When was the page access last? Okay? So if you need to keep this. So the way you do this is you can timestamp each page. Every time you access a page, you timestamp it, saying that's the time it was accessed. Okay? And if you have to evict a page, look at all the timestamps and evict the page with the oldest timestamp. That's the least recently accessed page by definition. Okay, is that clear? How you implement LRU? You have to keep a timestamp. Every time a page is accessed by any assembly instruction, you timestamp the page, saying this is the time of the latest access. Okay? So now the timestamp on a page tells you when was it accessed last. Okay, by definition, the page with the lowest timestamp is the one that's least recently accessed, least recently used. Okay? So if you have to evict a page, that's the one you pick. Okay? Simple idea, but this is, if you do this, if you actually implement this in an OS, your performance is going to be horrible. Okay, will not work well for you. Okay? The reason is, you have to put a timestamp on the page. So now what that means is in a page table, you'll have to have a timestamp field with every memory reference, you have to go and update that timestamp. Okay? So what does that do? Okay. Two memory accesses for every memory reference. Because you have to go and update the timestamp in the page table, you're stuck. Okay? So that's not a good idea. So your performance will be, memory access performance will be half. Okay? Effective memory access time will double. Yes. So, whenever you have to evict a page, you also have to search for the one with the lowest timestamp. So, for that, you might have to keep the pages sorted in some order, not keep them in random order. You may have to keep them as a heap or some more intelligent data structure that does not require you to do a linear search. Otherwise, every page eviction, that's also a problem. Every page eviction might mean if you have a million pages, you will have to search through a linked list of million pages. Okay, so, that's clearly not desirable. So for that you can pick better data structure. But the timestamping problem is still there. Okay? So what shall we do here? Okay, so that's number two. It says basically rather than doing a timestamp, one possibility is let's not use any timestamp. Let's just keep a linked list, okay, that's sorted in order of access. Every time you access a page, you bring it to the front of the list. Okay, so we don't keep explicit timestamps, we just keep pages sorted in time of order. Okay? Every access says that page is taken from where it's currently there and put at the front saying I am the most recently accessed. The page that's behind it in the linked list is the next most recently accessed. And the page that's at the tail of the linked list is the least recently accessed by definition. Okay? Alternative implementation. So you have to search through them all. That's true, but if you actually keep a page table, you can actually keep a pointer to the page. Okay, so that's not a problem. Okay, eviction is not a problem. You just have a go to the tail and you throw out the page at the tail. Okay. Now this scheme actually does worse than this scheme. Yeah, although it looks like you got rid of the timestamp, this is because you have to muck around with a doubly linked list. Yeah, you have to take that element from wherever it's in the linked list, you have to bring it in the front, so you have to update all these pointers. Yeah, because what is a linked list? So linked list is basically a data structure which has some elements. And this is a pointer to the previous element. Okay, that's a doubly linked list. Okay, so suppose that you access this page. Okay, you have to take it from here and put it up here. Okay, what does that mean? To remove it from this position, you have to go to this element. Okay, and then make it point there. Okay, and this goes away. You have to go to the next element. And make it point here. So now this element has gone from this position. Okay, then you put it here and then you update its pointer here. Go there, update its pointer here. Okay. Potentially six pointers have to be updated. to modify a linked list, doubly linked list. Okay, that means potentially you have 6 memory accesses over it. Okay, here you did only a timestamp, you went to the page table and added one value. Here you might have to actually change 6 values, 6 memory accesses plus the actual memory access. So your performance will go down by a factor of 7, not a factor of 2. Okay, even worse. Okay, all looks like good techniques in practice, but they actually don't do as well. Okay. So these are potential problems with implementing LRU efficiently. Okay, because we are trying to not slow down memory, okay, as much as possible. Okay, you want to make sure that you keep track of the recency of access of a page, but you have to do this very efficiently. Okay. All these schemes saying let's keep a timestamp, let's keep them in sorted order, don't work very well. Okay, because you will actually incur more memory accesses for the bookkeeping. Okay, so you can't have bookkeeping overhead be higher than the overhead of memory access. Okay, so because of this, most operating systems will only implement approximations of LRU. They will never implement full-blown LRU because it's simply too expensive. Okay, your performance will completely degrade if you actually go and implement real LRU. Okay, so how will we do this? Okay, so one thing you could do, we'll see approximation, is that you use reference bits. Okay, you use very crude approximations. Okay, so remember that we still have a TLB. Okay, a TLB is a cache for the page table. Okay, and the TLB keeps track of the most recently accessed entries of the page table, which are also the most recently accessed pages. Okay, and TLB is a cache, it's not accessing memory. So what you could do is you could actually add the timestamp, a crude version of the timestamp to the TLB, instead of adding that timestamp to the page table. Okay. And we have said that accessing the TLB, which is essentially a version of a fast register, is far more efficient than accessing RAM. Okay, order of magnitude faster than accessing RAM. Okay. So you can muck around with the TLB, that's allowed. Okay, you will not slow down performance significantly if you do that. If you muck around with the page table, you are going to be in trouble. If you make these other data structures that require even more memory accesses, you are in trouble. Okay? So that's the intuition. Can we implement LRU just by doing something to the TLB? Okay, so what could we do? One thing we could do is we can have a 1-bit timestamp. Okay? A timestamp is essentially an integer. It's a clock value, that's an integer. Okay? But that it could be an arbitrary integer. Okay, you don't want to blow up the TLB, so you want to keep an approximation of that timestamp. Okay? So you could have an 8-bit timestamp, you could have a 1-bit timestamp. So we'll do some tricks which will approximate the timestamp. It won't be an exact timestamp. Okay, in an 8-bit timestamp, what you will do is you will basically, let's do the 8-bit and then I'll talk about the 1-bit. Or rather, okay, so let's assume this is the TLB, which has pointers to pages. And you have 1-bit here. Okay. So every time you access this page, you set the bit to 1. If the bit is already set to 1, you will not do anything. This is a 1-bit timestamp. Okay. So when you start off, all bits are 0. At some point, bits will be 1. So when time comes to evict, okay, you can take a page with bit 0 and evict that page. Okay? Because any page that was more, and then clear all the bits at this point. Okay? So every time you evict a page, all the bits are reset. Okay? And then from this point on, any page that gets accessed, you will set its bit to 1. Okay? And the pages that still have bit 0 are the pages that were not accessed since the last page fault. Okay. So what we have done is we have crudely partitioned, rather than having a fine-grained list, linked list that's nicely sorted, we crudely partitioned the pages into two bins, old pages and new pages, young pages. Okay, young pages are the ones that have been recently accessed, their bits are set to 1. Old pages are the ones that were not accessed since the previous page fault, and their bits are set to 0. Okay. So we will now randomly pick any page that has a bit 0 and evict it. It's an approximation because of these two, we don't know which one was actually more recent. Okay, they are basically both been binned and put in the same bin. Okay. One of them is actually going to be older than the other one, but we don't know because we have only one bit to capture our timestamp. Okay. The timestamp 0 just says it's an old bit. If you had a real clock value, you could have actually compared the two timestamps and actually said this is the most recent. But this one bit is a very crude approximation of this timestamp. Okay. That's one way to do it. Okay. You can then relax this further, say instead of one bit, what if I had 2, 4, 8 bits, then what you would do actually is have more than one bit here. Okay, so you would basically have 0, 0, let's do 4 bits. Okay. So if you had 4 bits, what you would do is every time you touch a page, you will basically set its least recently accessed bit to 1, and after a set period, let's say 1 minute, you will left shift all the bits. Okay, so basically everybody shifts right, so this becomes 0, 0, 1, 0. This becomes 0, 0, 1, 0, and so on. Okay, so some pages might have, so this is essentially another timestamp. Okay, so now you can actually take any page with 0, 0, 0, 0, so it was not accessed in any of these 4 intervals. Each interval, each bit here captures whether that page was accessed in that interval. The interval is 1 minute, says this was not accessed 1 minute ago, it was accessed 2 minutes ago, it wasn't accessed in these 2 intervals. Okay? So if anyone has 0, 0, 0, 0, you know that page wasn't accessed in any of the past 4 intervals, if you had 4 bits. Okay? That's the oldest page by definition. Okay? You can just do comparison of integer values and figure out which is the oldest page, which is the newest page. Okay, anything that has a bit 1, 1, 1, 1 says this page is heavily accessed. Okay, it has been accessed in all of those intervals. Okay, so if you just take the integer values here, you will say that this basically has the least timestamp and this has the most highest timestamp as a bit string. Okay, yes.
You're just moving the 1 over, how would you get 1, 1, 1? Or you just add 1?
No, so if this was accessed, let's say started with this, it got access in the most recently, so then you left shift, so you get 0, 0, 1, 0, then gets accessed again, so this becomes 1, 1, okay, then you left shift again, so this becomes 0, 1, 1, 0, and it gets accessed again, so you basically keep shifting in ones, eventually all the bits will become 1, okay, that tells you, yes.
What if all the bits become 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, and then the page gets accessed again,
no, no, no. So you keep left shifting, right? So after 1, 1, 1, 1, when you left shift, you will basically, this value will go out and a 0 will come in. So it will basically be 1, 1,
so
1, 0.
So it will have to go up. So how would you know how many bits you need?
Sorry, how would you know what?
How many bits you will need?
So we assume that the hardware can only keep a 4-bit clock in this case. Okay, so you can only keep, the first one was a 1-bit clock. Okay, there's only 1 bit. Here we have a 4-bit clock. Okay, so what you do is each bit represents whether that page was accessed in a particular, let's say, period. 1 minute, just for sake of example. Okay, so any time that page is accessed now, in the next 1 minute, the least significant bit is set. If it was not accessed in that 1 minute, you don't do anything to it. At the end of that 1 minute, all these values get left shifted, which means that the most significant bit goes out, you just throw it out, and then you bring in a 0. Okay, that's what bit operations do. Right? So if you have some arbitrary value, let's say 1, 1, 1, 1, then at the end of this 1 minute, you will throw this one out, which means you will shift, these 3 bits will shift one position, and you will bring in a 0. So now this is the new clock value. And if this page gets accessed again in the next interval, this will be set to 1, otherwise it will be 1, 1, 1, 0, and then you will continue to do this. You will throw this out, so it will become 1, 1, 0, 0, and so on. So if you stop getting access after 4 intervals, this clock value will again become 0, 0, 0, 0.
Yeah.
Okay? That's how this clock would work.
So when it becomes 0, 0, 0, after being accessed all over again,
yeah,
it will think that
yes, and then that, all that says is this page was not accessed in the past 4 minutes. What happened before then, we have thrown out that history. So you only have 4-minute history in this case. right? So because each of this is capturing the history of what happened in the past 1 minute each. Okay, and all the older history stored. It may have been heavily accessed 10 minutes back. We have no record of that. All we know is what happened in the past 4 minutes at any given instant.
Because you will think that was the
major reason. Because if there are other pages that actually have some ones, they are more recently accessed than this page. You are not counting frequency of access, you are counting tracking recency of access. And that's fine because this page hasn't been accessed. It was heavily accessed in the past. So this is exactly what LRU would do in any case. Okay, it will have an old timestamp. Once you stop accessing it, the timestamp becomes older and older as time goes by. That's what this is doing. Okay? Any questions on this? Okay. So here are some more variants. Okay, so this one is called clock. This is basically implementation of this 1-bit idea. We'll not do 8 bits. We'll just go back to doing 1 bits. Okay, and then see how can you now use this 1 bit and implement this efficiently. Okay. So what we will do now is assume that frames are kept in a circular list. Okay. If you have a page fault, okay, then you have to basically go through this circular list and then find the first page with bit 0. Okay, and that's the one we are going to throw out. Okay, so here is a... Okay, so that's the picture here. Okay, so those are the frames. Okay, there's a 1-bit associated with each frame which is actually kept in the TLB, but here we are showing that it's kept with the page itself. Okay, and the bit tells you whether that the page has been accessed in the recent past. Okay, any time the page actually gets accessed, the bit will be set. Okay, so now that's a circular list. As you can see, there's an arrow pointing to some element in the circular list. Next time there is a page fault, this algorithm will now start scanning these pages either clockwise or anti-clockwise, doesn't matter which one. Let's pick one. Okay. So it first looks at the page it's pointing to. Okay, that bit is set. Okay, that tells you that the page was recently accessed. We will not await this page. Instead, this algorithm will just reset that bit and move on to the next element. It'll come here. Let's assume it is doing anti-clockwise. So that page also has a bit of 1. Okay. It was again accessed recently, so we don't want to evict it. We'll just reset its bit saying you have another chance. Okay? So I'm going to set your bit to 0 and I'm going to move on. Okay, then I come here, this page has a bit of 0. Okay, say okay, this page was not accessed in the recent past, otherwise its bit would have been set to 1. Good candidate for eviction. Okay, so then you evict this page. Okay? So basically you are going through this pages in circular order. But whenever you find a page with bit 1, you say it has been recently accessed, I'm going to give it a second chance. Okay, meaning I'm not going to evict it now. When I come around, when I cycle around and come back, if its bit is set to 0, then I'm going to evict it. Okay, but right now it looks like it was accessed in the recent past, so it gets another chance. Okay, this is why this algorithm is called second chance. Okay. So this is efficient because it's only using 1 bit for the to track when it was recently accessed. We already said you can keep that bit in the TLB, so there is nothing more to do. Okay, and it's efficient to implement because all the pages are tracked in a data structure that's a circular list. You just scan through the list until you find the first page with the bit 0 and evict it. If it just happens to be the next page, you are done. You might have to scan a few pages if you encounter others with bits of 1. Okay. As I already said, what this 1-bit clock is doing is crudely partitioning all the pages as young pages and old pages. Any page with a bit of 1 is a young page, recently accessed. But any page with a bit of 0 is a page that hasn't been accessed in a while. Okay? That's essentially what we have done. Okay, there's a question here saying why not partition into more than 2 categories. That's essentially what additional bits would do for you. Okay, so if you had a 2-bit clock, you would have four possible values. Okay. So this basically said these are the oldest pages. Okay. This is the newest page, this is the next newest page, and so on. So you basically look at it in this order, that's the order in which you will evict them. Young to lower values to higher values. Okay, if you're just at 0, 1, that's the order. You first pick these pages and then you will pick those pages. If everyone has bit of 1, then you just have to pick some page in this category. Otherwise, you pick something in this category. Okay? So that's essentially what we did with our 4-bit clock. So but the way you implement this actually is to make a circular list and look for pages that have older timestamps. Any questions on this? Okay, so this is called second chance, also called clock. Okay, so just same terminology, the two names for this algorithm. Okay, so there's a variant of this called enhanced second chance. Okay, so what this says is goes back to our observation. If you remember last time we were talking about when a page is brought in, should you just overwrite the old page? Or do you have to take the page that you are replacing and first write it out to disk? We said that if the page has been written to, has been modified, then the copy in memory is newer than the copy on disk, so you first have to write it out. Okay? And only then can you overwrite this page. Okay? So now in this case, we are not distinguishing between whether the page has been modified or not. We just track the age of the page. Okay, when was it recently accessed? So you may pick a page with bit 0 that has been written to. If that's the page you want to modify, your page fault rate is actually going to, page fault time will be larger, because first that page has to be written to disk, then the new page has to be brought from disk. Okay, there are two disk accesses to service this page fault. Okay, so it will take you twice as long, okay, before the page that you care about is actually brought into memory. You are better off trying to find a page that has a timestamp of 0 but hasn't been modified. Okay. If it hasn't been modified, then the contents in memory and the contents on disk are exactly the same. There is no reason to write it up. Okay. You already have a copy of what's in RAM. You can just bring a new page and blindly overwrite that page. Okay? Is that clear? So to do that, you have to now track not only what is the when was the page recently accessed, but whether it was returned to or not. Okay. So that's what enhanced second chance does. It has the usual 1-bit clock and it has a modify bit. The modify bit tells you whether the page was modified or not. The bit says 0, it says the page is same as the copy on disk. The bit says 1, it says after it was brought into RAM, it has been returned to, it has been modified. So you first need to write it back before you can evict and override this page. So clearly we will prefer pages that have its access bit 0 and its modify bit 0. That's the oldest page that hasn't been written to. So here is what the algorithms will say. So there are 4 possible values now. Okay. 0, 0, 0, 1, 1, 0 and 1, 1. Okay. Each of them means something different. Okay. 0, 0 says neither recently used nor modified. Okay. This is the preferred type of page we can replace. It's not, I have been accessed, it's not been modified, nobody cares at this point, at least the process doesn't care, so let's evict it. Okay. 0, 1 says it has been recently used, okay, but not modified. Okay, this is the modify bit, that's the use bit. Okay, it says it's been used but not modified. Okay, so it's not good to replace it because it has still been used, so we would want to keep it. It's been recently accessed. Okay. 1, 0 says it's been it's not recently used but modified, but it has, so I think I said it the other way around. So this is the use bit, that's the modify bit. It's not recently used but modified. So this is a good candidate for replacement. Okay? But you will have space, you will actually encounter 2x page fault time. Okay? Because you have to first write it out. Okay? Because this page is not being accessed, so it's okay to replace it, but you need to first write it out. It has been modified. Okay? So this is the third category. It says 1, 0. It says recently used but not modified. If it's recently used, we don't want to replace it. It may get accessed again. And this one says it has been recently used and modified, which means it is going to get accessed again, maybe modified again. Again, you don't want to touch it. So these two categories we prefer not to touch. Okay? But that's the preference order. Okay. If there are no 0, 0 pages, you go to a 0, 1 page and try to replace it. If there are no 0, 0 or 0, 1 page, then you will go to 1, 1, 1, 0 page and try to evict that. You don't have pages in any of the first three category, only then will you go and try to evict a page with this value. Yes, question.
Could you write and touch pages in the disk?
Could you write and fetch pages in the disk at the same time? You cannot, until the page actually goes out to disk, you cannot overwrite it. Okay? That said, you can write out some pages and bring in some other pages. Okay? What the OS actually does is it doesn't keep modified pages in memory until it's time to evict them. Periodically, there's a background process that goes and starts writing out pages. Okay? So that you can then, so a 01 page then becomes a 00 page because now you have made the copy in memory the same as the copy on disk. So now you, next time you have to evict it, there's no reason to write it out. So if you have a background job, if you have lots of modified pages, there's a background job that goes and tries to take some of the modifications and put them out on disk. Okay, so that when time comes to evict something, and if you do this in the background while nothing is happening, that's good because when you want to evict it, you can immediately throw it out. Okay, so that is done. But you cannot write it out and override it at the same time. That you cannot do. Okay, so that's essentially what second chance would do. It will start with a page, you will scan. If you find a page 00, fine, you are done, replace it. If you find a 01 page, okay, you initiate background IO to write it out. You don't replace it at this point. So this page has been modified. So let me start a background write to write it out. Next time I come along, maybe it's been written out, I can evict it. Okay? So initiate a write, log the page into memory until the IO completes, clear the modify bit and move on. Okay, continue the search. So you just start this background IO to do what I just said. Okay? And then basically you may go around and you may not find any page with 00. So in the second pass you will actually find something because you have cleared all of the use bits in the first pass. Okay, because as you go along you clear the use bit. Okay, and the modify bits you try to clear by initiating background IO. Okay. So next time around if there are no pages with 00 that you find, you will cycle through all the pages, come back. Okay, at this point you will at least find some pages that are either 00 or 01. Okay, by definition, because any 10 page would become 00 and 11 would also become. Okay, so you will basically go in the second or third pass, you will actually find a page in the worst case. Okay, so in the, by the third pass, everything would have become 00. So you might have to cycle through multiple times in the case where memory is heavily used. Typically, you don't have to do this. In a few scans, you find something. You don't have to cycle around through all of your pages and come back. That doesn't happen. Okay. But if your memory is in very heavy use, okay, is actively used, the pages are getting actively modified, you might actually go through all of the pages. Okay, find nothing with 00. There may be several with 01. You start writing them out, you go around, and second time you come along, hopefully some of those pages have gotten written out. Okay, so in the third pass, you might find a page with 00 and evict it. This is basically page replacement, which is called enhanced second chance. It's again, all of these are approximations of LRU, okay? But they add different optimization. One reduces the clock overhead, the timestamping overhead. What this one does is it tries to take into account which pages have been modified, try to write them out in the background, so you can evict them cleanly the next time you come along, want to evict the page, okay? So that you don't slow down the page fault rate. Any questions on this? This is the kind of stuff you actually see in operating system. Okay, they will not implement LRU. They will implement something like this. Okay, enhanced second chance or just normal second chance. Okay, there's an example here which I'm going to skip. We'll talk about, so now we have looked at page replacement. Okay, but all of our page replacement examples assume there's only one process. Okay, we say assume magically it was given 3 frames in our examples or 4 frames. Okay, now the question is, in reality you have lots of processes. Okay, you have to decide how many frames to allocate to each process. Okay, how do you do that? How do you decide that my browser will get 100 frames and my editor will get 75 frames? Or should they be given equal number of frames? Okay, so that's the question we want to answer now. Okay. So first thing is, how many processes can you even have in the system? Okay. As I said, essentially your system gives you illusion as if you have infinite memory. Okay. So you can start as many processes as you want, the system will not limit it. But you will see that beyond a point, a starting over processes tends to be counterproductive. Your performance of the system or the utilization you see in the system will look like this. Okay, the x-axis here is the degree of multiprogramming, which also means how many processes you have running at any given time. Okay. And so as you go down this x-axis, you have more and more active processes. Okay. Y-axis is utilization. Okay. As you have more processes, when you start from zero, as you have more processes, you can overlap CPU and I/O better. Okay. When some processes are actually doing I/O, there are other processes, enough other processes to run, so your utilization will keep rising. Okay. Because you can, if you have only a few processes, all of them blocked, your utilization will drop to zero. So there is some benefit in starting more processes because you can do better overlap of I/O computation, and that benefit is seen by better use of your CPU. Okay. But this will only rise to a point, and beyond that you will see a sudden drop. Okay. And this region is referred to as thrashing. Okay. And what happens, the reason utilization drops or tanks suddenly is that memory gets overcommitted. You have lots and lots of processes, hundreds of processes. Okay. You don't have enough RAM to allocate to these processes. Okay? And so what happens then is processes begin page faulting all the time. Okay? If you do not have enough RAM to give up to a process, you need to at least give as much RAM as is working set. Okay? If you don't, then the process will continuously page fault because it will try to access an active page that's not in RAM. So you'll try to go access that page, and then some other process will run that will page fault. So all processes will spend most of their time page faulting. And when you have a page fault, you will basically be doing I/O. So you can't do any computation. Okay. So when memory gets overcommitted in this region, okay, you do not have enough memory for the process. Okay. You have enough swap space, but that doesn't help because basically you're continuously fetching pages from swap space, evicting other pages, and the evicted pages get accessed. And then you again fault, and then you have the same problem that you had for that LRU example, where you had this A, B, C, D, you gave it only three frames, you will see lots of page faults. That's what happens in most of these processes when you are in this region. Okay. So you don't want to get there. Okay. So you don't want thrashing. So how do you avoid thrashing? In many operating systems, there will be a limit on the number of processes you can start. At some point of system will say, I will not start process. You can set this limit to be very high. So typically you will never encounter this limit. Okay, but there is a limit. Okay, one simple way to find this limit is you start an infinite loop with a fork. Okay, so and then you will see that very soon your fork will start returning error, saying cannot fork more processes. Because the system has put a limit, saying and it's some limit that somebody picked for you, saying, let's assume most machines have 2 gig of RAM, so let's assume that you can start 10,000, some number, you can pick that number as a OS designer. So if you try to start too many processes, the system will run into that process limit that's artificially set, okay, and then you will get an error. Ideally, that limit should be set based on the actual amount of RAM usage, but that is not done. They just set an artificial static limit just to prevent you from even going into that range. Okay? So this is what you should avoid, okay? Because that's the problem. So this phenomenon is called thrashing. Okay? You don't necessarily need to have thrashing with lots of processes. You can have thrashing with even a single process. Okay? If you just allocate a huge amount of RAM and just write a for loop that touches all of the pages, you will get that ABCD behavior in LRU because you are just marching through the pages, and then you start evicting the page that you are about to access when you will cycle through, and you will get that problem. You will basically just start page faulting all the time. But most processes will not have this pathological behavior. Yeah, processes will be they will exhibit some locality of reference. But you can create conditions where thrashing is immediate, okay, even with a single process. Okay, so that's a scenario we don't want to get into. Okay, so now assume that you have set some limit, so you are not in this region, you are essentially operating in this region. Okay, this is a well-behaved region. So then the question is, you have all these processes, they are all different, how do you decide how much RAM to allocate? Okay, simple policy is that everybody gets equal. You start a process, I allocate it 1,000 frames. Okay, that's or some number. Okay. Now, that clearly is not the right thing to do, because some processes will have more memory needs than other processes. You start Java processes, they typically, because they run in a JVM and whatnot, you will need have more memory footprint than if you write a simple C program, which is just 10 lines of code. Okay, so there's no reason to give this very simple program more memory than some others. Okay. So one thing you can basically do is do proportionate allocation. Okay, proportionate allocation says that you will actually track the virtual memory of the process. When you start up, there's an address space that is created based on how much code is contained in the process, how much data is contained in the process. Okay. So then you take all of the, so let's say SI is the size of virtual memory of process I. Okay. So the total size of virtual memory then is size, is summation of SI over all the processes. Okay. Proportionate allocation says that this is the amount of data, take the total RAM frames and give it a fraction that's in proportion to the virtual memory needs of the process. If a larger process gets more frames in this scenario, smaller process gets fewer frames because its memory, virtual memory footprint is smaller. So larger your memory, virtual memory footprint, okay, the more RAM frames you get. Okay, that's proportionate allocation. Okay, that's just one technique. You can actually check whether your OS is doing proportionate allocation. Typically it would not. So this is basically virtual memory and this is physical memory. Okay. In proportionate allocation, the ratio of this to this is constant. Okay, that's basically what proportionate allocation does. You will see that typically the more larger the size of virtual memory, the more physical frames you get, but in most operating systems there is no correlation, which means you are not, the OS is actually not doing proportionate allocation. So you can look at these two examples here. Okay. So both have about 90 megabytes of virtual memory. In this case, one has been given 8 megabytes, the other one has been given 28 megabytes. In proportionate allocation, they would have been given equal number of frames. Okay, that just tells you that in this case, this OS is not doing proportionate allocation, it's doing something else. Okay, so first technique was fixed allocation, equal allocation. We said not a good idea. This one says proportionate allocation, but most operating systems actually don't do this. We'll see why. Just a moment. The next one says no allocation. We will just let processes fight it out. Okay. So we'll put all of the pages on a global LRU queue. Okay. Every page for all the process goes on a global LRU queue. If you just happen to access all your pages more frequently or than other ones, then you will actually get more memory and you will evict somebody else's page. Okay, you create a page fault, you just look at this global LRU queue, you look at the end of the queue and you evict some page. Okay, that may not be your page, it may be some other process's page. Okay, so in this case, any process that accesses its pages more frequently gets favored over other more well-behaved processes that may not be accessing some pages. Okay, so this can cause potential problem because you may cause inadvertent thrashing. Okay, one process can cause system-wide thrashing by just exhibiting bad behavior. I can evict everyone else's pages by just marching through memory and just accessing all my pages very frequently and making sure that they all come into RAM and everyone else's pages get evicted and they all start thrashing. Right, so the advantage of the process of global replacement is it's flexible. As the needs of processes change, okay, you basically, this global queue will adapt. Okay, some process stops accessing a large number of its pages. Why keep them in memory? Let us give that memory to some other process. That's what this can do. But then any badly behaved process can cause problems for this exact same reason. Okay, because a process can evict somebody else's page, you can cause bad behavior and cause thrashing. Okay. So in this case, there is no allocation that the OS determines. You are just on a queue. Depending on when you accessed your pages, some subset of your pages will remain in RAM, others get evicted. And anyone can evict you, you can evict somebody else's pages based on access, global access patterns, okay, rather than local access patterns. Okay. So this is one technique. It doesn't have a number that you associate with the process, but it's just a global queue. The other technique says that's a bad idea, okay, because precisely this can you cannot control what some other process does. So let's not do global replacement, let's do per process replacement. Okay. In per process replacement, you only have an LRU queue per process. Okay. And processes are independent LRU queues. So if you have a page fault, you only affect your own page that's at the tail of your LRU queue, not somebody else's LRU queue. Okay? So each process has its own pool of pages. Okay, and then basically you do LRU within that queue. But that brings back the question of how much frames to give to each process. Okay, the size of the LRU queue is essentially the number of frames you are given to that process. Okay, that's how many pages you have. How do you decide that? In global, you didn't have to decide it because you just let the processes fight it out. Okay, here, you have to decide that this process, okay, with the worst in this case we just saw, that some process got 8 megabytes, which is barely 200 pages, and some other process got 300 megabytes. Okay, how do you make that decision? And that decision is basically made by estimating the working set size. See? For each process, you decide what is its working set, what are the pages it's actively working on. Okay? And you have to ensure that each process gets at least that much. Okay? If your allocation falls below your working set size, process is guaranteed to thrash. Okay? So what the OS has to do is ensure that the actual allocation is at least equal to the working set, maybe a little more than that. Okay. So the idea is you could do per process replacement, but then each process has to get at least its working set. Okay. That's the intuition for good performance. But then you can say, how do we now compute this magic number? Okay. What is the working set? So how do we do it? What ideas can we come up with to compute working set? Okay, so here is basically a picture that shows you what the working set is, how it changes. So that the line there shows you access patterns, which is essentially this ABCD stream, except that pages are numbered, not given letters. Okay. That says page 6, 2, 1. So at any given time, you look back and say, what are the most accessed pages? What are the actively accessed pages? So you look at time T1, you'll see the pages that are in active use are 1, 2, 5, 6, 7. These are the pages that are accessed within this time window delta. Okay? That's the window. That's the history you're going to look at and say, within this window, what pages were accessed? That is precisely your working set. Okay? So you can pick the window to be 1 minute and say, what are all the pages this process accessed in the past 1 minute? And you say, that's the working set. Okay? You can pick the 1 minute or 30 seconds, whatever value is suitable, but pick some value. And you keep track of all the accesses within that window, that's the working set. And you see that the working set changes. When you move to this point, you say the window is whatever, 10 frames here. The only pages that were accessed are 3 and 4. Okay, so the working set changed from 1, 2, 5, 6, 7, which are 5 pages to 2 pages. And the actual pages also changed. Okay, so if you keep track of the working set for the process, then you can intelligently allocate, saying this process in this case that needs at least 5 frames, otherwise it will thrash. And then when you are here, you say it at least needs 2 pages. Okay, so you can evict some pages, change the allocation and whatnot. Is that clear? This is a very important concept for memory management. So understand that there is this notion of a working set, and you need to at least allocate a process frames that are greater than the size of its working set. Otherwise, the process will thrash. Okay? And this is precisely why we had this behavior in this region, because as the number of processes grows, you have to at least allocate one frame to each process. And otherwise, the process cannot even run. Okay? So, if you allocate a very small number, okay, because as the number of processes grow, you can allocate fewer and fewer frames per process because of the fixed size of RAM. Okay? At some point, you basically fall below the working set, and that is when this happens. Okay, is that clear? Okay. so now we basically have replaced one problem with another. We basically said, okay, we can do this. Processes cannot impact each other. We know how much RAM to allocate to each process, which estimate the working sets. Okay? We sort of know how to do the working set, but as you can imagine, this is going to incur overheads. Okay? Every page reference, every memory reference, you have to track, because you need to estimate the working set. Okay? So bookkeeping overhead of computing the working set is high, because these are all memory references. If you keep, let's keep this nice table, which keeps track of what are my memory access, then every time I access a page, that's a memory reference, I go and update this data structure. Okay, again, you have two memory accesses. Okay, one to compute the working set and one to for the actual memory reference. Okay, clearly, that's going to slow down performance. Okay, so you can see that any bookkeeping and memory management schemes has to be very, very low. Okay, if you do any sort of bookkeeping that has high overhead, immediate impact on performance will be seen. Okay? So this seems like a good idea, but if you actually go compute the working set, you are in trouble. Okay, so what are ways around it? So what some operating systems do is they do sampling. Okay? They don't do it on every reference, every memory reference, but they can turn this on every millionth reference. Or every 100,000 references. Okay, so for very short windows, you can turn on this tracking and then turn it off immediately so that the impact on performance is very small. Okay, so you will sample saying, okay, every million, let me see what is the every millionth instruction accessing. Okay, so you will only have this tracking overhead for one instruction in a million. Okay, so you will amortize that overhead. So you will not get the exact working set, but because you are sampling randomly over every million instructions, you will get an approximate working set, which may be good enough. The approximate working set turns out to be 10, you allocate 20 frames. You allocate something more than what the working set is, it will turn out to be a right decision. Yes.
How many stages do you keep in the working set? Like, what does it depend on?
How many pages? So, yeah. First you have to define a window. Saying what do I mean by active use over what period. Okay, so I say, is it 1 minute, 5 minutes, pick a number. Okay, and then within that window, I look back over that window, saying over the past 1 minute, what are all the pages I accessed. So from here, I look back, like what are the pages, I accessed 1, accessed 5, accessed 7, accessed 6, and accessed 2. That's the working set. Yes. So by definition, those are pages that are in active use. So you have to, by this definition, you have to at least have 5 frames to do justice to this application's performance. Otherwise, its performance will go down. Okay. So one last thing here, which says, if working set computation, so sampling is one way to do it. Okay. You randomly sample every 100,000 or every millionth instruction, get an approximate idea of the working set, allocate that much RAM. Okay. Here is another technique that doesn't even bother. It basically says I'm going to guess. Okay, so I'll guess that your working set is 100. Okay. Allocate 100 frames. Observe the behavior. Is this process faulting a lot or not faulting? Okay. Typically you have this curve which says if this is the number of frames you allocate to the process and this is the page fault rate, as you allocate more frames, the page fault rate has to go down. Okay, assuming you do LR, you don't have Bell-Eddy's anomaly, you allocate more frames, you get better performance. Okay, so what you want is to be in this operating region. Okay, so if you are actually above this horizontal line, that means that your page fault rate is higher. Okay, then your acceptable threshold, that says give it more pages. Okay, so you start with 100 and you observe. So and if at 100 you are in this operating region, it says 100 isn't enough. Give it more. So as you give it more, you will slowly go down the curve. Okay, you might give it too much, then you will be in this operating region. It says now this process is getting better performance than many other processes. So let's take some frames away, pull it back in this region and give it to someone else. Give it to some other process. Okay, so all you have to do is track the page fault rate, and that is easy to do. Because each page fault is going to be 20 milliseconds. Right, that's a disk access. You can do whatever bookkeeping you want. 20 milliseconds is a long time. Right? So if you just track the page fault rate, you can adjust the amount of RAM that you have allocated. And then over a period of time, you will basically just bounce around and you will be in this region, and this is the region you are happy with, saying, okay, you are neither getting very bad performance, neither are you getting very good performance. You are in the region that we care about, and that's good enough. Okay, so this will not encounter any overhead. So you can do per process LRU, just track page fault rates and just try to push the process into that region. Okay, that's what most operating systems will do. Okay, so we run out of time here, so I'm going to stop. If anyone has just one announcement, if you have any questions about the programming assignment which we have handed out, was discussed yesterday, let us know. Okay?